This is from Uncommon Wisdom, Ajahn Dick's collection of the teachings of Ajahn Panyavado. This is the chapter entitled Presence. The middle way is much misunderstood in the West. People think it means the easy and convenient way of practice. But that idea of the path is merely the way of the kilesas, the way of mental defilements like laziness and complacency. Effort is difficult because it goes directly against the pull of the kilesas. There is an innate desire to just relax or to go into some pursuit that you feel comfortable with, some habitual activity that is second nature to you and is, therefore, easy and undemanding. Because of habit, the mind finds it very easy to think about such matters. No real effort is involved. But training the mind to go in new directions is much more demanding and difficult. Going against habitual tendencies, going against the grain, requires a purposeful effort of mind that must be intentionally brought up and applied. For instance, if a person investigates himself and finds he has a lot of greed for food, he might deliberately take food that's unsavory in order to halt the momentum of greed and bring his mind and bring his mental state back into balance. If attachment to the taste of food is a problem, he may eat only rough, unappetizing food, considering only what is necessary for nutrition. Because the greed for good, tasty food is pulling his mind in the wrong direction, he needs to find a suitable practice to pull it back to the middle again. In a similar way, when we find any state of mind disturbing our meditation practice, we must search for the correct antidote. That is the middle way. The middle way consists of practices that arouse energy aimed at correcting habitual imbalances that the kilesas produce. If the kilesas are biasing the mind in one direction, we must place a counterweight on the other side to bring the mind back to the middle. Only by keeping our mindfulness in the present moment will we be able to see clearly where those imbalances lie. The present moment is the balance point for the mind. The mind rests on just this moment, here and now. Past and future are concepts that the kilesas use to deceive us. They are shadows that we grasp and become attached to, only to suffer the consequences. The past is fiction. It has no reality. And the future is speculation. It also has no reality. The only reality is Dhamma at this very moment. I once talked with an acquaintance about past, future, and present time. He made the comment that the present is going past very quickly. I thought to myself, it isn't. The present doesn't change. There's no movement in the present. Present is just the present, and that's all. The present moment is a personal thing inside oneself. The changes are taking place externally. Changes occur in events and external phenomena that arise and die away, but those things are more or less an illusion. The present doesn't change. Everything around about is changing, but the present is a deeply rooted state of mind that doesn't change. Observing the present moment gives some idea of our internal situation. We learn how much work we have left to do and thus what direction we should take. In seeing the way forward, we realize the scope of our task and where the effort should be placed in meditation. In essence, by being present, we are cultivating right mindfulness. We become acutely aware of anicca or impermanence. We see sights with mindfulness and we realize that they are constantly changing appearance. We hear sounds with mindfulness and we realize that they are coming and going continuously. We begin to comprehend the all-encompassing nature of impermanence. Later, we may reflect on how the breath changes every moment. The beginning of the breath isn't the same as the middle of the breath or the end. Each moment it's changing. The moment that passed has disappeared completely into the past. It's gone. It is as though it occurred 1,000 years ago. It no longer matters. We can no longer find that part of the breath anywhere. The in and out breaths are in constant motion. The moment of the immediate present is moving along, leaving a path of past moments behind it. The future is always a projection. It never really exists. In truth, impermanence exists because the mind is moving from the present into the past, which is merely memory. When we see something now, we recall the image of its previous state and, comparing the two, feel that it has changed. In that way, we experience the changing nature of phenomena all the time. If we could remain thoroughly in the present, we would find no change at all. So we could say that the present is permanent. It's not changing. What changes is everything that whirls around, going from past to future and back again. Change becomes a problem for the mind because we have asavas, or outflows, that drag the mind out into the swirling mess, causing us to get caught up in it. We get so carried away by the changing world that we forget about the present reality, which means we are dealing with an unreal situation all the time. We always deal in the past and the future and forget about the present moment. So keeping the mind in the present all the time, firmly established in the here and now, is an excellent way of developing mindfulness. When we keep to the present, we are anchored in reality. We know our situation. If we are unaware of our situation, we're not in the present. For that reason, keeping the mind grounded in the present moment is a valuable training. One advantage of being anchored to the present is that we begin to see mental states and to understand for ourselves how they work. Once we see how our minds work, we start questioning the whole nature of who we are. It is good to frequently remind ourselves that what is here right now at this moment is all that exists. This is everything. Future and past are not here. We cannot find them. The past is gone and the future hasn't come. Only this moment is here. We keep reminding ourselves of that. When we experience states of longing for the past or the future, we can remind ourselves that neither of them exists right now. Longing for past and future experience is just a delusion. Being mindful of that will bring you back to the present moment. In the present, there isn't much trouble. Problems are based on the past and the future. Of course, we can still plan for the future as long as we are fully aware that we are doing it quite deliberately now in the present. But out of habit, we usually forget. We all have habitual ways of doing things. We use habitual modes of thinking, behaving, and understanding. So often these habits determine our mental state, making it difficult to realize what the truth is, making it difficult to be present. Even when we are focused in the present, our habitual ways are hovering in the background. If our attention lapses a bit, they take over straight away. The only way to overcome that tendency is to continue practicing the modes of training in Dhamma until the situation is seen more and more clearly. Then we begin to realize how delusory these concepts of past and future are, how they are not at all real. You might say that when the mind is in the present, it is as near to reality as it can possibly get. Whereas when the mind wanders into the past or future, it misses reality altogether. The past and the future are not real. The past is always something remembered, so we can never actually be in the past. We can access our memory, but when we access memory, we do it in the present. We don't revert to a previous moment in time. Nobody can go into the past, nor can anyone proceed into the future. The mind's projections into the future are just predictions of what may happen based on our experience of the past. Because of that, we can never access the future or the past. We're always tied to the present. This is where reality is. It can't be otherwise. The more we remain mindful, the more we keep to the present and stay with what's real. The key to it all is mindfulness. The world doesn't really know the present. When we talk about the world, what do we mean? We mean the typical worldly state of mind. A mind that is very scattered and unable to focus for any length of time ends up in a state of half-sleep, a dreamlike state. In that state, the delusion is almost complete. We have so much moha, so much delusion, that we are inextricably attached to the normal worldview, to the way things seem in the world, which is rooted in accepted conventions. Being locked into that one-dimensional perspective brings us back to birth again and again. The conventions and the habits that we are so accustomed to are the things that bring us back all the time. So it's important to break up the delusion which promotes that attachment. But we can't do it too quickly. Like everything else in nature, the more quickly something changes, the more violent the reaction is. So we must patiently develop and sharpen the tools we need to bring lasting change to our whole perspective. And mindfulness is the passport to success. When training to develop mindfulness, we try to be aware of what is coming in through the five senses, including our actions, our speech, and our thoughts. But that is merely the training for mindfulness. It's not the real thing. The real mindfulness is almost automatic. It is mindful awareness at the mano-dvara, the door of the mind. Everything enters the mind through that door, so if mindfulness is focused there, we know whatever comes in. There is no effort involved. It is simply automatic. But reaching the level of automatic mindfulness depends on the prior sustained effort we made to practice mindfulness in all of our daily activities. Only after much concerted effort can we reach the stage where mindfulness is automatic. Only then do we begin to realize that the whole world exists inside the mind, that actually our entire experience is internal. Because everything comes in through the mind door, there is no need to send the mind out to external objects. Imagine you are guarding a fortress surrounded by a wall with several doors leading in. When people come in, you must run from door to door and back again to check on them. It soon becomes hectic and confusing. But if you remain in the center and know from that central vantage point, you are aware of everything that comes and goes. Similarly, if, when seeing, you put your mindfulness on the sights, and then when hearing, you put it on the sounds, mindfulness must jump about all over the place. When it's centered in the mind, it knows whatever sensations come in, whether from seeing or hearing or whatever. The whole lot is known easily without any trouble at all. You know what comes and goes there all the time. You don't need to go out to the object. When it's like that, you are aware of everything. Nothing can escape your attention. When you gain skill in mindfulness, the problems that come up in practice usually sort themselves out in a way that allows you to progress unhindered. When you are stuck and can't find a way forward, mindfulness is usually the faculty that is lacking. Mindfulness provides the data that you need to investigate with wisdom. By being constantly aware of what is happening in the present moment, mindfulness is the awareness that gathers the data that you need to work with. It delineates the parameters of whatever you want to focus on. Once you have the raw data in the form of details, you can begin building up a clear picture as a basis for understanding. In a sense, mindfulness supervises the investigation, but in a passive, not an active way. If you can remain truly mindful, then that mindfulness will gradually overcome the delusion. Once you scrutinize a difficult situation to see what it really means, your mindful attention cuts to the heart of that problem. Turning to look directly at a problematic mental state tends to diminish the problem. Diverting attention from it by thinking about something else or finding some external distraction merely allows that mental state to remain. Such diversions don't stop it. They merely postpone dealing with it. At best, they're a temporary pause. Say a person feels bored. What is boredom? Boredom usually means you can't fix the mind on anything. Concentration brings happiness. Boredom means that the mind is so dispersed it can't focus on anything long enough to bring up interest and feel contentment. When the mind is like that, it's bored. When you turn to examine that state, you are bringing up something to concentrate on. That concentration itself tends to get rid of the boredom. Concentration practices entail learning to bring the mind more and more into the present. They accomplish that by using non-analytical methods of controlling the mind. In other words, wisdom is not active, so there's no clear comprehension of what's happening. But because samadhi concentration is a present moment experience that is real, a strong sense of contentment arises. All discontent stems from clinging to either the past or the future. You are attached to what has already happened, or you are worried about what will happen in the future. The present is here now, and it is just right in itself. Being in the present fosters an internal state of equilibrium and well-being. The training for concentration requires a persistent effort as part of the training. When you train yourself to put forth effort in everything you do, that positive tendency is constantly strengthened. But effort is a neutral power, so it is important that you direct it towards positive goals. Effort will follow our intentions, so it should always be accompanied by a certain amount of wisdom. We must overcome the status quo, our habitual state of unawareness, the tendency to think and act while being completely unaware of what we are doing. The mind is simply not present. When it's like that, thinking and acting are quite automatic without the underlying knowingness of the mind being really engaged. That is why mindfulness is so important. It keeps the mind focused in the present moment so that we can see and know what we are doing and thinking. When we are fully aware of what we think and do, we must then put that knowledge into a frame of reference to figure out how our thoughts and actions relate to everything else that is going on around us. From that, we can make a judgment, deciding whether we think and do is good or bad, right or wrong. We can then determine what the consequences are likely to be. This is where mindfulness and wisdom come into play. Wise effort is the willpower needed to prevent the arising of evil or unwholesome thoughts, and to abandon any unwholesome thoughts that have already arisen. It is also the willpower needed to produce and develop good and wholesome mental states, as well as to maintain and increase those good states already present. That is the way willpower should be used. It empowers the volition to go in the right direction. Unfortunately, willpower often has the power of the kilesas behind it. When that's the case, it will always push in the wrong direction. When people follow the wrong way until it becomes habitual, it is extremely difficult to turn around and go in the right way. They can reach a point where it's almost impossible to come back. It is not absolutely impossible, because there is no fundamental impossibility for anyone, but they simply have no interest in the things that will turn them around. Because they are only interested in unwholesome matters, they do not want to hear about wholesome ones. When it's like that, nobody can make them reverse course. Only traumatic or catastrophic events can have a sobering effect. On the other hand, for those people whose willpower habitually goes in the right direction, it becomes increasingly more unlikely to slip back into unwholesome ways. Their positive direction allows them to see the dangers of wrong behavior, and because of that, they develop a healthy respect for the consequences of their actions. People who understand the potential for their actions to bring results are fearful of making bad karma. They know that unfortunate consequences will rebound back on them. Right effort is the effort that brings you into alignment with the middle way. It is the effort that actively works against the kilesas and undermines their ability to manipulate the mind. This is the true meaning of the much talked about and much misunderstood middle way. There's a lot of muddle in the middle way. Many Buddhists have the idea that the middle way means taking the path of least resistance, but it doesn't. The middle way is uncompromising. When the kilesas pull us away from the middle, instead of giving in to them, we must use a practice that restores the proper balance and brings us back to the center. The Buddha taught that when your mind is biased in one way, you have to counterbalance it to bring yourself back to the middle. He taught three factors that are fundamental to success in meditation: mindfulness, wisdom, and effort. Mindfulness keeps you attentive and aware. Wisdom directs your attention in the right way, and effort makes you progress further and further along the path. Following the middle path means that you use whichever one is appropriate for a particular situation. The kilesas do not come up in a nice orderly fashion. They come up randomly in their own time. Their arising is unpredictable, so you must be prepared to use whatever means necessary to counter them and bring your mind back into balance. Most people think that the middle way is like a good old English compromise, but that isn't true. The middle way indicates the path required to counter the defilements. Because of the nature of their kilesas, some people have to practice the strictest austerities to counter them. For such people, those strict austerities are the middle way. Other people, because their kilesas are weaker, can practice with more ease and comfort. For them, that will be the middle way. When you go in the direction of the kilesas, you are moving away from the center. Countering the kilesas means bringing your mind and your practice back to the center, that is, back into balance. The middle way is a matter of balancing the practice against the kilesas.
I really like that point right at the very end. For different people, the middle way is different. For someone with strong kilesa austerities and strictnesses, that's a point more poor. Is that what he's trying to bring up? Yeah.
It's bringing it back to balance. It's not finding the easy way.
It's finding an ideal that one has, thinking that attaining the ideal is going to get us something.
Yeah, I think that's a point well taken, too. It seems quite common, I think, in our tradition as well as other ones, for there to be some sort of assumed like right way, and that's the right way for everybody. And it's, like you're saying, it's just, it's not the case.